Hey everyone, Jason Kramer, happy to be here, founder of Cultivize. So one thing that I've had as advice, being a self-made entrepreneur, which we'll talk more about, is listening to others. And I know it's common, many people say, surround yourself with people smarter than you, but I can tell you 100% that has proved to be ultimately successful for me, my business, and my life. And really just excited to talk to Phil today, and let's jump into it.
All right. So surround yourself with people smarter than you. When did you get that advice, Jason? How's that serve you?
Well, I think that was, you know, for sure in my early stages of being, you know, on my own, running my first business. You know, I was, you know, my quick background, I've been a communicator for almost 50 years. And even though I'm 47, people are like, well, how is that? Right. Well, you communicate, right? You cry when you want something, and you have all these different forms of communication. And as you build yourself as a character and you grow as a child, as an adult, you learn to communicate other ways. And what natural progression then into the world of marketing and communication. And so, you know, starting my career as a designer and communicating visually with people was really interesting to me. And now I'm in the world of communicating, you know, in other ways. And so for me, it was realizing that I had a skill that I was turning into a business, but I didn't know anything about being a business owner. And so I was sitting there being like, this is great. I'm on my own. I'm my own boss, controlling my own hours, my own destiny. But what am I ultimately doing? I'm just doing work and I'm paying bills. I'm getting paid, but am I running a business, or am I just kind of, is this like a hobby? And so, you know, working with sales trainers, which I've worked with a lot of them over the years, business coaches, have really helped me shape and understand the fundamentals. I was probably 3 years into business before I even knew what a profit margin was. I was like, oh, that sounds like a good hourly rate. You know, I'll charge that, but not realizing what overhead was and all these other things. And that's really a huge, you know, pivotal point. You know, if you don't know those things, you're really going to struggle, you know, to be your own boss and to run your own company.
Wow. So how do you find those people then when you're new in business? I mean, yeah, it's not like mentors are coming up to you and like, hey, Jason, it appears that you suck at this. Right. Can I help you? Right. Like, so how do you find them, man?
Well, I think the first thing is like self-discovery and realizing you do need that help. Right. So even if it's there and it's knocking on the door, you may be like, I'm good. Like, I don't need that. Like, I'm on my own. I hung my shingle and whatever the other catchphrase is you want to put out there, right? I don't need this other help. So for me, it was really listening to these other people and meeting them. And I really met them just through face-to-face. You know, I did a ton of networking. I used to live in Brooklyn many years ago and was working in Manhattan for, you know, almost 20 years. And so I was doing a lot of networking, a lot of, you know, events and just meeting people. And I'm like, oh, that sounds really interesting. And I can tell their enthusiasm, their passion, and all these other things that were happening. And I'm like, I want to be a part of that. Like, I want to work with you to kind of have that rub off on me. And so that's how it started, is just meeting people and recognizing they can provide something to me that could be useful.
Yeah. Well, being self-aware, knowing that you don't know everything, comes often with age. At 25, mm-hmm. I knew everything. Now that I'm 50, I know nothing. And so I'm very open to, you know, and by nothing, I don't mean I don't have any value. What I mean is I'm open to listening to just about anybody, yeah, and see if I can learn from you or from you because I don't ever want to be you, right? There's two ways there that we can learn from people. Which one do you find is more valuable, Jason? Do you learn just as much from the mistakes others make and maybe the way that they are than the way that they share with you? Or what do you think?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, so as a you know, focus on email marketing as a component and a byproduct of what we do today, which we'll get into, I get blasted just like you do and everybody listening with, you know, hundreds if not thousands of emails, solicitation, and not even email, LinkedIn and everything else, right? Even stuff sent to my house. And so I look at all that as a former marketer and I'm like, this is just, you know, doesn't resonate, right? Like, what are you doing here? Why are you wasting your time? You know, it's not going to actually do anything. And so for me, it's like, if I'm doing that as a marketer to promote our business, how can I do that better? And so I think the biggest challenge that people have that sit, whether you're in a marketing role, in a sales role, it doesn't matter. How do you put yourselves in the shoes of the person you're trying to sell to, right? And how do you strip away everything you know about your own business and try to truly be in their shoes, which is extremely difficult. It is not easy to do that. And I struggle with that on a daily basis because I have so much knowledge, right? And, you know, I have the understanding of what it is that I'm trying to sell, but communicating that to somebody that doesn't know anything, right? Or I just say nothing, but knows less, right? Or is trying to be informed. That's, I think, that pivotal point. And so it's learning from other people's mistakes, but it's also saying, hey, what are the top brands doing really exceptionally well? And we all know that everybody steals from everybody, right? So if you find a company that has, you know, something amazing going on, you're like, hey, they really hit it out of the park. You know, we should copy that model. I mean, and so that's what a lot of people do as well, right? So is they steal from others that are doing it better, right?
Steal like an artist, right? Yeah. Austin Kleon's book, super good, super good. So with that, something that can't be stolen is you got a company called Cultivize.
Yes.
That's a totally made up word here. That being said, Google is a made up word, you know, true. A lot of made up words.
That's
Flickr,
right.
Right. Insert. So this is, I'm going to put you on the spot here for a recommendation. Yeah. Should I make up a word and call it Gerby Eyes? Or should I go with a trust and true, like Phil is a great sales guy.com? What do you think?
So my feeling is it's always good to have something that's unique, right? My first business, JLK Creative Inc. So unoriginal, my initials, right? But I came from the world of like the old school ad agencies where every ad agency was the initials of the founders, right? That's just what it was, you know, in like the 80s and 90s, that's what you did, right? I mean, you had others that weren't, but even Saatchi & Saatchi there was a Saatchi & Saatchi, right? And so that's what you did. And when I, 5 years ago or so, when I started Cultivize, I said to myself, I don't want something generic. I want something unique, something that is going to pop, is going to be different, that's going to be a one-off, right, that you haven't heard of before. But there's a challenge, right? And, you know, we've talked about this before. It's like, well, how do you spell the name, right? And you don't want to come up with something that's too crazy where people are going to spell it wrong and maybe get your competitor instead of you. But ultimately, Cultivize is built on two principles, is to cultivate relationships, which is what we do for our B2B clients, and to seize opportunities. So people are spending money to generate leads. We're helping you seize those opportunities and turn them into customers.
Ooh, I like that. Okay, well, Cultivize it is. That's pretty easy. We can get that. So that's good. So own the brand. Try to be original. And if you can't, then I guess, hire Jason. That's it. Okay, so show's over. No, just kidding. Hey, so with that, Jason, let's talk about sales success here and scaling it up. One of the awesome things that I love about you is that you've got a great plan here for what to do after the lead. So let's talk about that, right? Because, I mean, driving traffic, okay, you can advertise. I mean, there's the peso model. I mean, pick something here. But let's talk about after that, right? Now it's in. Now I've got it. Now Jason signed up for my newsletter. Now what do I do?
Yeah, well, and that's it, right? So everybody is putting all this effort, whether you're spending $500 a month or, you know, $500,000 a month to build awareness for your brand, to advertise to some level, but ultimately it's to generate a consumer, right? Or a customer, right? To come in and to buy something. And so what I find really puzzling, you know, and I'm sure you've seen this too, and even people listening are actually doing this today, right? Making this mistake is that they're spending money on lead gen, but they're not looking at the next part of the equation, right? So they're sending out a monthly newsletter. They're doing direct mail. They're running a radio spot, but they're not tracking the ROI and what are the results. And when I talk about results, I'm not talking about how many people came to our website to fill out a form, but how many of those actually turned into a positive conversation? How many of those were qualified leads or unqualified leads? And how much revenue did we actually generate from that campaign? And guess what? If we generated more money than we spent, that's awesome. We want to double down. We want to go and really drive that channel home because we know that marketing effort really worked. But if it's the opposite, let's put the brakes on it, right? How many companies, and I've done it, right, in years past, spend money on AdWords, let's say. It's so easy. Or on Facebook marketing and LinkedIn. All these tools are accessible. But the challenge is that it's easy to turn on the ad and let the engine run. It's hard to know if it's actually working and producing any results beyond just the initial surface of a report saying you got leads, right? And so that's what, you know, Cultivize is all about. It's about taking it from what happens after the lead, nurturing that lead, educating that lead through the buyer's journey, giving insights not only to the sales team, but to the marketing team and to the C-suite so that we could comprehensively understand what's working, what's not, and really make things more efficient and more productive for the entire company.
Okay. That makes so much sense, right? To your point, a lot of us aren't doing that. So let's get a little bit more practical here. So, okay, I sign up for the lead, or I sign up for your newsletter, probably drop a lead magnet, right? Something that got them interested. Then what do? Do I just send them, put them on the newsletter list, and every third Tuesday of the month they get an email? Or what does that look like, Jason? So, give me an example.
So in the ideal world, you're going to have some type of CRM system that is in place that's connected to both your marketing efforts and your sales efforts. If we're talking, your example, Phil, about a newsletter, you would put them on the newsletter. You would know that they engaged in that newsletter. They visited your website, right? Something basic but important. It's not just who's opening and who's clicking, but what are they doing after the click? So you want to track that. Most CRM systems have a tool called lead scoring, which is, again, needs to be customized to your specific business and your sales process. But if done correctly, it'll start identifying who are the top tier contacts in your CRM that are showing the most promise and the most engaged. And then ultimately, the sales team can then follow up with those people. What a big mistake also often happens is that you might put them onto a drip campaign. There's tons of software out there that's relatively easy to use to say, someone signs up for my newsletter, they're going to get a series of 10 emails over the next 3 months. Great, that's good. You're going to educate them. But what happens if that time frame, during that time frame, they engage or they become a customer? What's built up to take them out of that sequence and to move along to something else? And I'll give you a quick example. Everybody today, not everybody, most people, right, business, B2B businesses are using some type of calendar link, right? Hey, let's get on a call. Here's my link. Well, how many people click that link but actually never book a call? Thousands, right?
Lots
of people. We have an automation, and we do this for clients too, where if you click our link to book a call, but you don't book a call, guess what? 3 days later, you get an email from me. Hey, Phil, looks like you tried scheduling a call with me. We must have had some technical snafu. I didn't see it pop in my calendar. I just want to follow up with you and confirm when is a good time to talk, right? You know, or if they request that playbook you mentioned before about some type of content, there's sequences, right? If they view the document, so it's one thing to request it, but how many people don't even actually look at it?
Big percentage, right? Yeah.
So here's another good example. Have two different scenarios. They view the book, whatever it is, right? The piece of content. A couple of days later, personal email. Thank you so much for downloading our content. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions, would love to reach out, you know, reach out to me. We could talk. Really short, simple. But then if they don't, hey, I noticed you downloaded this a couple of days ago. If you haven't had a chance to look at it again, here's the link one more time, right? And kind of prompting them just to take some type of action. And there's all sorts of other scenarios. Obviously, these are some high level approaches. But think about beyond the click, like what is happening? And are you just setting something to kind of run in the background with no supervision? Or are you thinking about all the different branches of how people can navigate through your content? And that's what you should be doing.
Wow. So how complicated does it need to be, right? If we're a, let's say we're a $10 million company, how complicated do we need to make that journey for folks? I mean, sure. Do we need to keep branching? Or can we simply do just a little bit enough to, you know, to get some sort of insight?
So there's no simple answer, unfortunately. But the good news is that, you know, it doesn't have to be complicated regardless of what you're selling. Generally, a company that has a more complex sale, right, that's a longer sales cycle, is going to have more complexity to the flows, if you will, that might be built out into their playbook. Whereas somebody that's selling something that's relatively an easy decision, I'm buying a, you know, a new widget for $1,000. Okay, if you don't buy from me, you're buying it from someone else. It's not going to be difficult to make that decision. Maybe there's a couple of quick follow-ups that happen there. So the answer is that we base everything on what the customer is selling, right, that we're working with. Generally, we work with a lot of B2Bs, a lot of manufacturers, distributors, but we also work in the consumer space too. And generally, the consumer space, the buying process is certainly a lot shorter than on the B2B side. We have some clients where it's a 15-month to 24-month sales cycle. It's a long time to be trying to sell a product or a service into somebody. You're talking about something that's very expensive, and that's a very unique sell. And so that comes with a tailored approach. So what I would consider is, for people listening, look at your sales process today. If you have the data to understand how long it takes to actually sell somebody, what are you doing during that journey? What are you doing over that 12-month period right now to educate them, to inform them, to deal with objections beyond just the salesperson remembering to call John because they haven't spoken to John in a while?
Yeah, that's funny. Or I'm in the area, right?
Yeah,
that's
I just happen to be by. I thought I'd bring by donuts, you know. And oh, he's out sick today. Oh, I didn't know, you know.
Right? That's funny. That is funny. So with that, right, we want to scale this up and scale sales success. That's what we want to talk about today. It sounds to me like a lot of this is shrinking it down to understand where people are in the cycle and are they actually qualified to even buy? So what am I missing here, Jason? What else can we talk about to scale sales success?
So the one thing that it really starts with is understanding what is the current process that's being used to sell. That's like the foremost thing. So it's, you know, going in to build a new home, not looking and saying, oh, we don't need blueprints. We don't need an architect. We're just going to start building the roof before we start.
Oh, come on. That's how I build my house. That works.
I know. And it's beautiful. I actually saw it all laying crumbled on the ground. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I didn't do that.
And so it would be, right? It would be if there was no foundation, right? So it's startling to me, but also I understand why that even multi-million dollar organizations don't have a written defined sales process for their team. They just hire salespeople. They're like, oh, we're hiring the best of the best, or we're hiring a good salesperson, go out there and sell. And they're not giving them the tools and the resources to succeed, right? And that's why, as we know, salespeople have, there's a high turnover in a general sort of terminology there, in that position, because they're not given the resources. So our first job is to help peel back the layers and start talking to them almost like I'm presenting, honestly, Phil, to like a third grade classroom, right? So you get a lead. What is the first thing you do? What's the second thing you do? What's the third thing you do? You know, and tell me about that. And so I got to like pull all this information out of sales managers, out of salespeople, out of CEOs, whoever it is that has and retains the information, to start building them a playbook, to write down and visualize what is their sales process. Once we have that, we start looking for all the cracks and all the areas that we can improve upon, both from efficiency, productivity, from a communication standpoint. The one thing that's really astonishing, and I don't know how many we have listening today, but generally manufacturers and people that, or companies that deal with a lot of quotes, have little to no follow-up process for their quotes. We've worked with companies where they have literally hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of open quotes sitting there as potential revenue, but there's no process and system to follow up with those quotes. They send the quote and they're just waiting for the person to say, hey, yes, let's order, or they never hear from anybody. We could automate that. We can have automated emails go out from a salesperson, right? From the person you know saying, hey, Jason, just following up. It's been 30 days since I sent you the quote. Just want to see if you have any questions, right? Here's the information in the quote. That could all be automated. I mean, people are not realizing the technology that they have available to them. And I think they're really missing out on the competitive advantage, because the reality is that the companies that do have this in place are going to close a lot more business because nothing's falling through the cracks.
Yeah. Well, and to, you know, steal our title here, right? That's going to scale.
Yeah.
That's going to require less manpower, less people power, less salesperson power to actually get through. So I think that's spot on. So as we do that, what are some of the reasons that you've heard that organizations don't do this, Jason?
Well, okay. So number one is that nearly 70% of the people or companies, people and companies out there will fail. That's right. Fail at implementing a CRM. Why? Well, because they don't know how to implement the CRM. They're not CRM specialists. Hold on,
70%.
Nearly 70%.
You could, will fail at implementing it. Oh my gosh.
And if you want to reach out to me on LinkedIn, on, you know, the email me, contact me. I have a whole series of articles everywhere from Forbes, Harvard Business School. It's all backed up by data. And the reason they fail is they don't have the expertise. They don't have the understanding. They're generally also buying software that's not designed to fit their goals and their needs, right? So they're like, oh, you know, I'll mention it. I have no affiliation. I heard HubSpot's great. I'm going to go buy and spend 50 grand on HubSpot, right? Or on whatever it is. It doesn't matter. Salesforce. But that tool may not be the right tool for you. Just because it worked for your buddy that owns another, you know, company doesn't mean it's going to work for you. So they're thinking software is going to solve the problem, but you and I both know people solve problems, right? So it's not having the right technology, not having the right team, but then there's also no follow through, right? So those are all things that we can help guide companies on to understand what are those needs and what's the existing technology they have that we could tie into that is working. And that's where we always start, right? Is looking at that landscape, because without that, it's like I said before, it's building the house without the foundation and it's always going to crumble.
Wow. So 70% of CRMs fail. They have no talent. And what was the third point there, Jason? I missed that. I'm going to write that down.
Sure. Yeah, that they are generally getting the software or buying software based on its features and benefits, but not understanding if it's really aligning to their business.
Oh, yeah. Goals. Software is misaligned. Yeah, no. Wow. Yeah, that makes so much sense with that. I mean, that I can't tell you how many organizations I've worked with that say, yeah, I just want to buy insert product here, right? HubSpot, Salesforce, yeah, whatever the heck they want to buy. And when you ask them why, they're like, well, because I do. Right. It's really good. They're the industry leader. And I will tell you, HubSpot, Salesforce, great tools. We're not slagging on them, but they might not be great for you. Right. And I think that's the point Jason here is trying to make. So with that, Jason, let's help folks get started today here. And we're going to go deeper another time here, but let's help folks get started. If they want to get started on this journey, first of all, I know you've got a great lead nurturing guide at After the Lead, but give them an action besides just downloading at After the Lead and getting that book, so that they can get started on scaling their sales success.
Okay. So really quick, a couple of things you can do right away. First is, and this is an easy one, look at your bank statement. If you have access to the bank statement, if you're a small business, if not, if you're the procurement person or head of marketing, CMO, whoever it is, start writing down all the technology that your company uses for your role or your department. And then look at your team and look at yourself and say, am I using this technology? What am I using it for? Right? So that could be just on a piece of paper or in a spreadsheet. Start there, right? Start understanding what you have to work with today. And is it helping or is it actually not even doing anything? That's the first step. The second step is talk to your team, right? So we work with companies where it's one or two salespeople up to it could be 30 salespeople, but talk to people and understand, what do you need? What tools would make your job easier? What struggles do you have? What problems do you have, right? Another thing to start looking at is asking yourself, do I have insights about the decisions I need to make in my role at the company that are informed, right? And my sales team, and I keep using sales teams, there is an important component, but are they all like going rogue and using their own spreadsheets? And I don't have like a central place to pull all that data together, right? Am I not able to kind of easily cross-reference between what marketing is doing, what the sales team is doing? So if you're in that C-suite or if you're a decision maker listening today, and you can't make informed decisions because you don't have the data to make those decisions, that's a problem, right? So that's something that easily can be fixed, obviously maybe with some work, but it's something to look at. The last thing I think people can also consider today is almost every business does email marketing. Take a quick look at that. What are you doing with your email marketing? Are you sending the exact same message to every single person in your database? Are you segmenting your data? How often are you sending out the emails? Is like, just on a whim, oh, we haven't sent an email in a while, let's send an email today. Or is there a strategy behind your email marketing? And then beyond just sending it out, what's happening? We talked about that earlier in the show. Are you tracking who's going to the website? Are you tracking anything else? If you're not, then you should be, right? So another thing you'll find at After the Lead, you'll also see we're going to offer today a free email delivery assessment. No one will be charged for that, but for the listeners here, we can go in and we actually can see what's happening to the emails after you hit send. Are they actually going into the inbox? Are they wanting the promotions folder? Is there any issues going on a technical level with the email software you're using today? And I can tell you that most email software do not have a proactive approach to compliance. So it's very common that we see, we've seen this for big museums, for all different businesses, that they're being blacklisted and they don't even know it, right? Because ultimately these other companies don't care to tell you, right? Ultimately, they'll just kick you off of their platform when it gets really bad. So I would say if you're sending out more than 5,000 emails a month, meaning to 5,000 people, maybe even 2,500, you should definitely, you know, have us check that out and make sure that everything is, as they say, kosher, right?
There you go. Or copacetic, if you will.
Copacetic.
Hey, whatever.
I could have gone 50-50 with that one.
That's right. I know you could. So cool. So friends, if you're listening here, look at your bank statement. Write down the tech. Are you using this? What am I using it for? And is it helping? Or is it just shelfware? With that, talk to your team. Make sure you know what they need. Ask yourself, do I have insight that is informed, or are there spreadsheets out there that are helping my team go rogue? Review your email marketing. Figure out what's happening after they sign up. And then last but not least, talk to Jason and his team about email deliverability. Lots of great stuff there. Friends, if you're listening here, go to afterthelead.com. Get to know Jason Kramer and his team at Cultivize even more. Lots of great stuff. Jason, we're going to do this again, and we're going to go deeper into what happens after the lead. But I just want to say thank you for your time and for your insight and for After the Lead. That's great stuff.
Absolutely. Thank you. Happy to be here and really enjoyed the conversation today and look forward to the next one.
Me too. All right. Thank you.